Everybody, welcome to the Canine Connection podcast. Today, Lori and I are going to be talking about let's talk about the word first, because some people call it arousal, some people call it drive, some people say the dog is high or the dog is low. In essence, what we're talking about is when the dog just gets more and more excited, animated, nervy, or the dog kind of gets lower. Lori, how would you say it? I think it's hard because the people use different words to basically describe the same thing.
Yeah, it's pretty much like I would just describe it as, I always say it's like their heightened emotional state, like their state of responsiveness, their alertness, usually to something like an outside stimulus sort of thing, right? Like, and it can, like arousal, we can see them go, it could be high arousal, like that's what we're talking about. Most people will call it either drive or the dog is high. But arousal can be low too, right? So it can go in the other direction. That's when people are saying my dog gets really low in the ring. And you see with this stuff a lot, you know, how you see it is through like their physical and emotional state. Like there's changes in the dog.
Yeah. So back in the day when I learned competition obedience, there was one answer to every problem. Tug more and get your dog more, they used to say, into drive, get your dog more aroused, get your dog more excited, right? So everything was like tug more until the dog was like and like frantic and really like on the edge, right? That was our answer to everything. Now, I mean, you could argue fortunate. I say I'm really sorry to Tyler because he had a very exceptional capacity to be in that incredibly highly aroused state and still function, which is extremely rare. But what I discovered was, so he had a kind of quote unquote problem / issue, where for his entire career that we could never quote unquote fix, which was when I was healing, he didn't give me great eye contact. His eyes would flick around all the time. And we used to think it's because he's not fully paying attention to me. Now, he still obviously was able to do his job and do it at a very high level. But, it, you know, it was just something that used to bother me and I wanted to fix it. I never did. Fast forward, I'm training another dog and I'm in my yard. Dog is young. Tug out, start healing. And holy crap, his eyes are doing the exact same thing. And in that moment, I recognized that it wasn't the dog. It was me. It was something I was doing. Sadly, I still did not know what. I actually contacted, so I'd been working with a behaviorist for a dog that I had that wasn't wired right and had a bunch of issues. And I asked her, like, what do you think, like, what is happening? So she attempted, and well, it took her a little bit of time to convince me that it was because I had the dog in too high arousal and I needed to lower that arousal. And I was like, oh, no. We cannot do that because if we do that, my dog's going to be sucky. My dog's going to be slow. My dog's going to look terrible. I don't want that. And she, bless her heart, hung in there. And, you know, explained to me that it wasn't healthy. It wasn't comfortable. That, you know, this was not a good state for the dog to be in. That lowering the arousal didn't mean lowering it to where the dog was like plodding along. Just lowering it enough so that the dog could be animated, you know, happy, into it and focused, but could still actually concentrate. right? And so it took me a while, I'm not going to lie, to like grasp, I wouldn't even say grasp, to accept the concept and change my belief system because it had been drilled into me, right? And once I understood it and I started working with it, since then I have been not just like a believer, but I preach it constantly because if the dog is in too high arousal, I see this all the time, it quickly spills into anxiety and the dog is very uncomfortable. And then mm-hmm. the dog is so twitchy, they make mistakes like anticipation errors, right? Offering behaviors, vocalizing, and then we correct them for it. And it's not even the dog's fault. It's our fault because we put the dog in that state, in a state where the dog can't function optimally. And then when they make an error, make a mistake because of that, we're like, naughty dog. Well, that's totally unfair. Like mm-hmm. I did that to them.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's a thing because I, like you said, people get into that little bit of a false view of, well, if I don't get my dog psycho crazy, then my dog is going to look shitty and look flat in the ring, you know? So they fall into that trap a little bit. And without knowing enough about arousal and how dogs can think or how they think through heightened or lower arousal, it can definitely affect how your dog is going to perform for sure. Because if you really think about it, and if you take a couple kids and they're outside playing and they're playing this wicked game of whatever tag and they're running and screaming and they're sweating, and then you pull them inside and they're screaming and talking and laughing, and you go, okay, sit down and do your math right now. Are they going to be able to really think and do that?
No,
absolutely not. So you really have to think about if your dog's arousal state is so high, then can they, and in obedience, we know we're asking for such mental focus from these dogs, the precision that we're asking them to do, it is intense. So if your dog's arousal state's too high and crazy, are they truly, it takes a very, very special dog to be able to efficiently mm-hmm. and effectively perform under such a crazy arousal state, right? And Tyler was, he was a unicorn, right? So he was able to perform at such a successful high level, but you take the average Joe Show's dog and you take him and spin him up enough and then go send him out to do articles or something like that, the rate of errors is going to be higher because of that.
Well, I see it in every sport, right? Like I see it in field, the dog's so hyper at the line that it makes mistakes, right? It mm-hmm. doesn't pay attention. Doesn't want, it can't. That, so that's the big thing for me, right? It's not that the dog's being naughty. It literally can't do it. Just yeah. like you said with the kid. It's the same with an adult, right? If you're like in the middle of watching something exciting or doing something captivating or whatever, and then somebody says, here, concentrate on this task. You cannot just do that immediately without calming down and getting your brain organized first. I see it in agility, where the dog's already excited about running the course. Why are you adding massive frantic tugging to that? Now the dog's screaming. The dog's like, ah! The dog makes a mistake and it's like, down. Dog made a mistake. Naughty dog. Why did the dog do that? Well, because you put the dog in a state where they can't function. They can't think and mm-hmm. be clear-headed. And it's the same with low arousal. I see the other thing all the time. Dogs in the crate napping. Dogs laying down while you're talking to your friend. Whatever, you're doing something. Person picks the dog up and immediately wants the dog to do a task that requires concentration. The dog can't, so the dog might lag or yawn or act like they're, you know, not paying attention. And then it's like, naughty dog, well, what are you doing? Well, dude, give the dog a minute. Like, right. It was just staring into space. Like, perfect example. If you're scrolling through Facebook, I guarantee you, if in the middle of you doing that, I say to you, hey, and I ask you a complex question or a math problem, you are not going to be able to put the phone, move the phone away, look at me, and instantly respond. It's impossible. Go right. ahead and try it. I dare you. You will not be able to. You right. won't, right?
No, it, you, yeah.
Because yeah. you're engrossed in that. First of all, 99% of the time, you're going to look at me and go, what?
What?
And I'm yeah. going to have to repeat the question, right? Because you didn't even freaking hear me. You heard, rah, rah, rah. That's it.
Right.
Then you need to shift from what you were focusing on to me, to the question, ponder it, and then respond. Right. So why would a dog be any different? Like, why do you expect your dog to just go from dreaming or thinking doggy thoughts or sniffing the environment or spacing out to instantly being able to work? And work requires performance sports. All sports require a level of focus. I don't care what sport your dog is doing, even if it's something innate like nose work. Your dog's right. going to have to shift gears, right. right?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And, you know, I think there's, you know, we should talk about what it looks like. I think there's people have heard arousal, they've heard high, but what does it truly look like, right? What are the signs that your dog, other than the, you know, if we think of high arousal dogs or a dog that's high, we're thinking, we immediately are like, okay, the dog could be barking at us. The dog can be, you know, the tail's wagging frenetically, you know, lots of movement, lots of alertness. But there also is, there are more subtle signs I think people need to be aware of in arousal in a dog, especially when we're going to start talking about like managing their arousal, right, on dogs, because some dogs are just naturally high arousal dogs and there's dogs that are naturally low arousal dogs, right? So what do those dogs look like? What are those signs that we know that the arousal state's going up, right? So the first thing I can tell you, because I own one of them, is I can take Stormy and she can just be sitting there looking at me. And if she sees that I have a bumper in my hand, I can immediately tell her arousal state is going up just by she lip licks, right? So she starts looking like a little lizard. Her lip licking is getting increasing to me. And right there, I'm like, her arousal state's going up. And with that, it'll instantly explode and get higher and higher and higher. So that tells me, so I learn all those things just by playing with her, being with her. And then if I'm doing obedience with her, when we start actually doing some work, then if I go to set her up for an exercise and I pre-cue her and I see the lip licking starting, that means that my dog's arousal state's coming up, right? So these are some of the signs we can start talking about when we start to see it.
I think for some people, I tell them now, like, that really don't know, just start watching them in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like closely. So what does my dog look like when the UPS guy comes, right? What does my dog look like when I prepare their meals? Mm-hmm. What does my dog look like when, and it depends on your dog, when they see a squirrel, when they see a deer, right? What does your dog look like when they're laying down and they're sleeping and then you get up? Well, most of the time they stretch, they shake, they yawn, they do certain behaviors, and then all of a sudden they look more alert. So I think if you start observing them carefully in life first, at least it gives you it starts to give you an idea of your dog and how they transition between arousal states. Like, and if you even watch dogs play, they play really hard and then all of a sudden they stop and they shake because yeah. they're lowering their arousal because it's getting too high. So just observing all these different things will start to give you really good information, like what happens before, what happens after, right? Then in training, I think for me, the biggest thing is their eyes, because they can lie. Like Zaina is a little liar. She is such a liar, right? So she's well trained. So she understands that she's supposed to look at me. So in her mind, she goes, I'm looking at you. Her two little eyeballs are looking right at me, but her little nose is going to the left. She's thinking about something over there. But she's like, look, I'm doing my job. I'm like, yeah. You're not engaged, and I can tell, right? I can always tell by my dog's eyes, because if you have a conversation, everyone's experienced this. You're looking right at somebody. You're talking to each other. And all of a sudden, you're like, they're not even listening to me. Right? Like, you can see it.
Totally.
You can see that they got distracted and they're thinking about something else. And it's a really uncomfortable feeling. It's like, I feel like, why am I even talking? Like, I just stopped talking. I'm like, is everything okay? And more, and every time they'll go, oh, I'm sorry. I just thought of this, or I just heard that or something. Like, you could see it. You can see it in your dog's eyes too, but people get like, they're not reading their dog in the moment. We're mechanic, because training is so hard. We're mechanically going through the steps. So if the dog's head is up, we assume their arousal is good and they're ready to roll, but you can see it in their eyes. Like I can see in their eyes, like when Zaina's looking at me and her pupils are dilated and her eyes look like they're going to pop out of her head and she's like, and her whole body's tense. I'm like, oh boy, I better calm her down because she's going to explode any second. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to mindfully look down and say, where on a scale of 1 to 10 do I think my dog's arousal is right now? And you may guess wrong, and that's okay, right? Yeah. So if I say, oh, I think she's good, and then I do the exercise and she goes, rah! Or she anticipates, then I'm like, whoopsie, my bad. I misread that. I thought you were good, but you weren't. You're a little too aroused. So now I know what that looks like. So let me calm you down a little bit. Let's try again. Now, how do you look now? Okay, can you work now? You can? Oh, good. Okay, so now I compare what that looks like for this dog with what comes after. So I always say, look at what happened immediately before and learn to like actually, don't just look at your dog, see your dog.
Yeah, because you really do. I think that's a really a not well-known ability, an important one we need to have for sure, a lot of people. Because I find that they're not sure really what that means. And we've talked about this for, you know, we're always talking about the importance of reading our dogs and needing to know where they are. And arousal is, you know, we want to know where they are in their state of arousal, just because, like I said, that is going to affect their, that's going to affect their performance, like their efficiency and their ability to do the task that we're asking them to do, right?
And so, their ability to learn. Like you can't learn.
Right. Right. In that they need to be in that optimal state for sure. You know, and it changes all the time. That's the thing too. The dog's arousal state can be changing all the time. So, you know, if I'm taking Ever over to do you know, the retrieve over the high jump where she gets to run, you know, and I pre-cue her and her ears come up and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I can tell she's in an optimal arousal state. Her eyes are staring at me. She's edgy enough where I know she's going to go out with gusto and come back. And then I might transition her over to the broad jump and I've got a different arousal state in my dog, you know? So these are the things that I'm constantly reading at it when I'm trialing, and then in training, I'm reading them also too, so that I can practice. We want to practice being able to manage that all the time. And I think people are going to really want to know, well, what does the perfect arousal state look like? You know, I think it differs per dog, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think for sure, though, I would say to me, the most obvious thing is their eyes are very clear. Clear is the best way I can describe it. Like when their arousal's too low, it's kind of like that they're looking at me, but nobody's home kind of look, right? And all my dogs across the board will have that look. And then when their arousal's heightened across the board, their eyes are dilated. Sometimes like Zaina's will be more like boring into me, but they're dilated. Like she can barely hold, like they look like they're going to pop out of her head. Other dogs like Zesty and Zeal, their eyes are dilated, but they're very twitchy. Like they have a hard time focusing because there's all these chemicals being released and their eyes are really twitchy. But in all cases, my dog is not looking at me with clear, bright eyes, where I look in their eyes and I go, oh, hey, buddy, we're on the same page. Cool. Like that's awesome. Right. And again, a good indication is what follows. Right. So with over arousal, if you then ask the dog, if you teach them something or you ask them to do something, there's a higher chance you're going to get vocalization. So it could be whining. It could be barking. There's a very high chance they're going to have problems with impulse control, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to make anticipation errors, or you're going to say twist and they're going to spin down stand, you know, like,
right.
They're not, or you're going to like try shaping something and they're just frantically offering things and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like just you feel like you want to say to them, calm down. And most people, if you pay attention to your feelings, like, cause I see this happen all the time. Dogs over aroused, the dog gets frenetic. The handler doesn't realize it, but they start feeling anxious. So they respond with the same kind of energy. Mm-hmm. When I feel a dog get frenetic, I always immediately feel anxious. And so then I immediately calm everything down. Because I'm like, all right, stop the madness. So you will feel that. You will feel uncomfortable. So if you feel uncomfortable, imagine how uncomfortable the dog feels. Then you need to look at what that looks like and go, okay, this, when my dog looks like this, this is not good. Same with if a dog is under aroused and they're just kind of out to lunch, you know, you can't, and you ask them to do something and they're like, what? Or they do it really slowly, or they look like they're not paying attention, or they look like they're being naughty and sniffing or wondering or not. Well, the dog's just not there. It's not ready. It can't focus yet. Like I was just at the Walmart right out front. So my dogs have been there. They know the deal. So I walk over there and Zaina looks around. She's like, oh, yep, I know we're at the Walmart. We're going to work. So what does she do? She stretches. Right?
Yeah, right.
Of course she does. Like, go ahead, you stretch. But now I'm not going to assume she's ready. I look at her and I'm like, you good? She's like, no, hold on. She sneezes a bunch of times because she's bringing her own arousal up because she knows that she needs to be in a little more of an alert state, not just to be able to do the work, but to be able to do it in this challenging environment, right? So then she kind of like offers a behavior too. So then I go, okay, but I'm still not convinced she's ready. I'm like, all right, let's see if you can work. Can you do a few tricks? Maybe if she does them slow or if she sneezes some more, I'm like, okay, you're still not ready. No worries. You know, then eventually she hops into heel position And I'm like, okay, let's see if you can work now. So let's do a little healing because that requires concentration. If you can do that, I have a pretty good idea that you're ready. But if you can't, I'm going to say, oh, you still need more time, right? So I start healing. Maybe she sneezes a time or two. And then all of a sudden she's dialed in. Why? She's accurate. She's looking at me with intensity. She's like, okay, let's go. I know what we're doing. Right? Right now I know she's ready. So again, it's trial and error. Initially, I might think you're ready. I might go to start healing and my dog starts sneezing. And then I'm like, whoopsie, my bad. I thought you were ready. Clearly you're not. Yeah. Right. So you have to give yourself time and make a whole bunch of mistakes to figure it out. Right?
Yeah,
you
while
have to
really
be willing to do that.
Yeah, while really, really paying attention to your dog, you know, reading all that body language that they do. And yeah, and I've got the same thing. Another example would be Stormy. So if I'm training and I take her out of her crate, and as soon as, you know, I put a leash on her and put her on a with me, like she knows we're going to work. Like we're in the training facility. This is what we do. So she knows she's going to go to work. So I'll put her on a with me, and I know she needs some time because of who she is. She comes out like highly aroused. There's sneezing. There could be barking with her, and I need to let her work some of that out, because if I didn't and I took that dog straight from crate to gate, she'd make error after error, because she, not that she's just being a jerk, but she truly cannot think. She cannot concentrate and focus on the task at hand. So she needs time. And how much time? It depends. But I'm not going to, like you know, you read your dog. If I go to approach the ring gate and starts lip licking and a bark comes, she's not ready. She's not ready. She's too high aroused. And because if I go in the ring, she's just going to make errors.
Yeah. And some dogs, they're all different, right? So like Zeal, poor guy. Mm-hmm. When I was teaching things to him, like I still wanted him to be fun. So I'd be like, let's tug or let's do I'd try to bring his arousal up a little bit. And he'd be like, no. Like when he learned something, it was so painfully slow and like painful to watch. I wanted to poke my eyeballs out. Like it was so hard for me, but I knew that was how he learned. And if I left him alone and let him learn that over time, as he got more and more and more confident, he would innately get faster and faster. But if I tried to put that speed in while he was learning, he just would have a meltdown. Like he couldn't do it. So right. I had to honor that. And like I had to get rid of the old adage that had been drilled into my brain for like a decade, you know, oh, if he learns it slow, he'll do it slow. You can never let him do it slow, you know.
Right.
And I had to like have faith all on my own, because there was nobody to like help me with this that was like, oh yeah, you're doing the right thing. Right. I was like all out on my own on an island, and I just had to have faith that once he learned it, once he became confident, then I could add speed. Then yeah. I could add, you know, animation to it. And he was super fast in the ring, super animated in the ring. For his whole career. But if you saw him when he was learning stuff, you would have had serious doubts. But you have to honor who this animal is. And the dogs will tell you, like Zesty did something so fascinating one time. So he used to be really nervous when stuff happened behind him. So if I asked him to do something like signals or command discrimination, which means I have to leave him, he would be really nervous. So I spent so much time carefully building it up slowly over time. So one time I'm at a store all the way in the back, so it wasn't too crazy. And I'm like, okay, come on, buddy, let's tug. And I'm going to raise your arousal just enough, but so that you're happy and you're not so worried about the environment, right? And then I do his signal. And then he'd do it. And I go, yes, good job, buddy. And I'd be like, here's your toy. And he's like, no, I don't want the toy. And I'm like, that's so weird. Come on, get the toy, buddy. No, don't want the toy. And he's just looking at me, like just looking at me, right? And he's turning his head away from the toy. And at first I'm like, oh, that's weird. Like, why doesn't he want to tug? Like, and all of a sudden I went, oh, he's telling me I cannot be in that state of arousal and concentrate on this specific task. Mm-hmm. So I stopped asking him to tug. I just did it when he was right. I just gave him a moderate value cookie, medium value cookie, right? Because he was like, I can't be mm-hmm. that high. And he's like, oh, thank you. I'll take that cookie. Good. Okay. And he was able to do it. Now, mm-hmm. can I tug? Can he do it? Yes. But I couldn't then. And he clear as day told me that. Right. I just had to like sit there and go through this mental process where I'm like, oh, that's so odd. But if you really listen, like they're very clear. They're good mm-hmm. communicators, right? We just have to take those few minutes. Like I put him down and I sat there and I was like, wow, that's so weird. What? Why does he not want to tug? You know, and I had to figure it out. So they're telling us all the time, like, I'm not comfortable, or I am comfortable, or I need this. I need a low arousal. I need a higher arousal.
Yeah.
We just have to listen. So I think the first step is just starting to pay attention, take notes, write it down. What does my dog look like? And when my dog looks like this, and then I ask them to work, what happens? Mm-hmm. Right? And start pairing the things together, right? So, and then the next step is in that time, manipulating your dog's arousal, right? So if I look at my dog and my dog's arousal is too low, people then, the next thing they're going to go is, well, what do I do? Right. Mm-hmm. Like when it was low, that was always easier for me because you could do games. Like you could do a cookie toss game.
Right.
You could have the food in your hand and have your dog chase it like prey. You could ask the dog to do a bunch of tricks. You could ask the dog to offer behaviors. It like depends on the dog. If some dogs, you can let it run through a tunnel a few times, send it around a cone. Like, tug if the dog likes to tug. You know, all dogs don't. Some dogs, you have to figure out what games, what activities does my dog like that brings their excitement level up, not up so high that my dog loses their mind, mm-hmm. but brings it high enough. And then you have to learn, like, if I'm going to tug, how much? Because if I tug a certain amount and I out, then my dog can work. If I tug more than that, then when I out, my dog's too aroused. Now I have to bring the arousal back down. So what am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's tricky. Like, it is a lot of trial and error and experimentation for sure. Like, I, you know, just working with Stormy, she's really my first dog who's got high arousal. My other two dogs are more low arousal dogs, but Stormy is more high arousal, and it's been challenging and very new for me learning how to do that. And you've helped me a bunch with that. I had to really learn how much of each thing I could really do before I could ask her to work. Because if I had my tug, my bumper in my back pocket, and I ask her to tug, and we go into a game of tug for whatever, 10 seconds, and then I out her and immediately put her in a setup, I will easily get a bark from her for sure. Mm-hmm. So these are just all, the, you know, and I don't want that in the ring. So I have to really be able to know what I need to be using, because we do want to maintain, we always want that sweet spot. I think mm-hmm. we're trying to always find that sweet spot where the dog is in a nice optimum arousal state that they can work really beautifully in. And that scale tips really easily. So it's easy to take a dog like Stormy or a more high arousal dog and easily, you know, whatever you're using to create more arousal or excitement, and you will get, you know, the consequences of stuff. Well,
so I had that with Zeal because he was innately an extremely nervous dog. Like, I couldn't use a clicker. He would flinch, like motion, inanimate, like he was afraid of everything, right? So in order for him to be able to function in the ring, I developed all these things once he knew all the behaviors to increase his arousal, right? So I did that within my training with lots of games and tugging and excitement. But then I also developed cues that would increase his arousal, right? So I have cues where if I use that cue, my dog will get more and more and more aroused, which was great, except... Drove all the way to Florida, which is not around the corner. Spent a boatload of money. And in the, I don't know how many times we went in the ring, 5, 6, whatever, over 2 days, more than half the classes he flunked on anticipation because he could barely hold it together. I had him so overly aroused.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, I'd rather have him be over aroused than a nervous wreck. But like, now what? Like, I had nothing to bring his arousal down and
right.
So as he's like, as the class is going on and he's getting higher and higher, I'm like hanging on for dear life, and I had absolutely
nothing. Yeah.
So called my behaviorist friends.
Help.
Now what do I do, right? So I don't even remember how, like, but basically she was like, you need to develop a calm cue, right? So it was an experiment. So, because I remember vividly my training partner and I at the time, we were training and I was like, okay, somehow we have to create a cue now that gets the dog to calm down. And it was basically, again, just experimenting. Like, I did use some concepts that I learned from when I worked with children with autism. When they get overstimulated, they don't have, their nervous system does not have the ability to downregulate.
Right.
So deep pressure helps them. So I kind of applied that to the dog. So you could do a couple of things. First of all, ask them to do stillness behaviors, duration behaviors, right? Because now they're imposing impulse control on themselves, which brings their arousal down. So just sit and don't move, or sit and do a chin rest, or do a sustained nose touch, or stand. And I teach my dogs this staring trick where they just stare at me and don't move, right? That requires them to control their body, and that mm-hmm. automatically lowers their arousal. But I also used hands-on techniques where I put my hand on the dog and either squeeze the dog or do very heavy, heavy petting on the dog, like almost like pulling their skin, like it's very heavy. And depending on the dog, where you do that varies widely, right? On their chest, on their shoulder, on the side of their head, on the back of their head. Like it's, you have to experiment with it. But the dog will actually respond. And once you hone it down, it is amazing. So like my dog can be over aroused. Now my dog's, their cue system is very sophisticated. I just touch the side outside of their head with 2 fingers, and they instantly, like, you will see them visibly lower their arousal. Their breathing will change. They'll lip lick, or they'll yawn, or they'll sneeze, or their body just relaxes. And like even more fascinating, so I have a student, Donald, who was on our episode.
Yeah.
his dog, no matter what he did, it just didn't want him to touch it. Like, he couldn't get it to work. So, and I've seen it. It's amazing. So he taught the dog that he takes a deep breath, an exaggerated deep breath. So he goes, and the dog responds to that and calms down. So that's his calm cue.
Yeah.
And it works. It's amazing. Right. So the key with the calm cue, though, is you can't mark and reinforce it, because then it becomes a trick, and then it becomes a behavior that actually increases the dog's arousal, because the dog's like, look, I'm being calm.
Yeah. Right. 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 Right.
So it's the one thing where you don't, to me, it's just information. I'm just saying to the dog, calm down.
Yeah.
Right. And the dog goes, oh, okay. And as soon as the dog calms down, I remove the cue. So yeah. Don't keep your cue there. Right. The cue is information that says calm down. So I liken it to, like, you're really nervous. You're going to give a presentation or you're going to compete. Do you want some, and you're about to go in short in like 10 minutes. Do you want someone to come up and rub your arm and go, hey, you're going to be awesome. Don't worry about it.
Right.
Or do you just want someone to come up and like squeeze your arm and just give you a look, like a look that says you're going to be fine. And then that's that you would prefer that, I guarantee you. And it's the same with the dog. So I'm just giving my dog the cue. I'm looking at the dog like, calm down. You're fine. And the dog goes, okay. And then they calm down. I remove the cue. Now my dog is in a lower state and better able to concentrate and focus.
Yeah. Yeah. And this can be, you know, this is something you just play around with and experiment with and training. You know, because a lot of people, I think, will be like, well, you can't really touch the dog in the ring. You can't touch him to the point where, like what Petra was saying, like where she started out with just putting her hand on the side of the dog's face and sort of almost gripping or putting the hand on the dog, and really, you can't do that. But eventually, if you do enough of that in training and in your life, then that's when you just lighten up the cue enough where now Petra, all she has to do is just take her fingertips and lightly touch the side of her dog's face. And that becomes the cue. So it's just a, you know, it's just a developed cue that you just put in over time. It's just anything else that you're teaching your dog. Right. And just like with like the cues that we want to bring the dogs up, you know, like most of that stuff is just the tricks that we use in life that we have become so highly reinforcing for the dogs, you know, about asking the dog to bounce. It's become so self-reinforcing. So that's something that you can use in the ring too, which could kick your dog's arousal state up because it's fun and it can just bring them up and it's exciting. They like doing that. You know, and that's just goes hand in hand with being able to read your dog, you know, all the little signs, which I don't, you know, signs like we've talked about yawning. Yawning isn't always that the dog is stressed out. I think that's the biggest thing. There'll be a crowd of people around the ring and the dog yawns and people are like, oh God, he's so stressed. Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. That just might be a behavior the dog is showing that is just adjusting its arousal state.
And the way you know, again, is by what happens after, right? So
yeah.
So when I was showing Zeal, we still had human people as figure eights. And that's really hard because now you have three people in essence, two stewards that are being the post and the judge. So you're approaching three people and just people pressure was the hardest thing for him. So as I approached the figure eight, I would tell him eight figure eight. So he knows what's coming. Right. And 100% of the time, like, so he was, when I moved from whatever came before to there, he was excited because he liked it. Cause he's next to me. I'm talking to him. I'm like, good boy, buddy, you're doing great. And that made him really happy. And then I'd sit him and I'd say, we're going to do the figure eight. And he'd go, oh, hold on. 100% of the time he would yawn. Now, how do I know? Was it stress? Well, if it was stress when I took off, he would have been like sluggy and flat, right? But 100% of the time when the judge said, are you ready? I said, ready. And she said, forward, I better get the hell out of Dodge, because he was like shot out of a cannon. Because what in essence he did is he was just lowering his arousal and putting himself in high focus. Because he's like, this activity requires a lot of focus because I'm healing and that's hard. And I need to ignore these people and that's hard for me. Right? Yeah. Because I'm uncomfortable. So he yawned, but then he was boom. And he would like real high energy, do a beautiful figure eight every time. So that says to me that that yawn was not stress. He's adjusting his arousal. Zesty will do that, or Zaina. Zaina does this every time. If I'm walking away from her on signals, she does this snapping thing like an alligator with her mouth.
Yeah.
So if I'm walking away and I hear snap, snap, I know she's going to do her signal.
Right.
Because she's doing that to like as a way to focus her mind. When I turn around after she snaps, she's perfectly dialed in and relaxed. She responds perfectly to my signal. She's good to go. If I walk away and I don't hear snapping, I'm always like, oh God, oh God. Like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. Right. But if I hear that snapping, I'm all good. With Zesty, if I walk away, I can't see it. I'll see it on video. If he yawns and then shakes just a little bit, then when I turn around, he is dialed in. Yeah. Again, he's using that to just, I think, get rid of a little bit of tension and just focus himself in. Now, if it was negative stress, then that means when I go to give him a signal, he's either not going to do it, or he's going to do it wrong, or he's going to do it really slow.
Yeah.
And at some point, probably flunk the exercise. But right. If he does it and then he does the signals, he comes flying in on his front, jumps into his finish. That was not a negative stress. That was him just adjusting his arousal and or adjusting his focus so he could do his job in that challenging situation. So reading what happens and what I always like to look at what happened immediately before the behavior and what happens immediately after the behavior, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And another example, it's just like, this is where I just find it all fascinating because they're just telling us through their body language, these dogs, you know, like they don't have vocabulary. So it's the more we listen and pay attention, the more information we get on how they're feeling. Like a great one would be, I figured out really quickly, like so I ended an exercise with Ever. And if I didn't physically release her out, which sometimes I do, where I'll just release her and she can jump up, right? Before I transition to the next. If I didn't do that and I just kept her in sort of a formal heel to transition to the next exercise, as soon as I got to that point of the start of that next exercise and I would ask her to set up, she would shake. And that's just her. Like, she's like, hold on, I got to shake this off for a second so I can concentrate so I can be ready for the next thing we do. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just so fascinating to me because that's what she needs to do. And when she does that now, the first couple of times I was like, oh God, oh God, like she's shaking. Mm-hmm. But it became a really obvious thing that she needed to do. And then she was able to just pop right into her setup. And she was, now she looked at me with bright eyes. She was ready to go on to the next thing. And that may change over time. You know, that could change. Like she's still relatively green in the ring. You know, these things can be changing all the time where maybe she doesn't need to do that as much or that might go away. But for right now, these are like the subtle signs that I'm just reading in my dog. And it just helps me to understand where she is in her arousal state. Again, always trying to find that perfect sweet spot for most optimum performance level.
And sometimes it's counterintuitive. I remember this really blew my mind. So because Zeal was really nervous, There were times when he would get kind of flat, right? And yeah. So I said to the behaviorist, well, what do I do there? And she's like, well, use your calming signal. I'm like, what? Calming yeah. signal? He's already yeah. flat. Why would I do that? Like, he'll just like melt. No, no, no. He's doing that because he's really anxious. So yeah. if you give him calming, that actually is reassuring. And then he'll feel better and he'll actually come up with his energy. Right. So I was like, I was dubious, but you know, like I'm Forrest Gump. If you tell me to do something, I'll do it. And I'll try anything. Like I literally will try anything to see if it works or not. Like I'm weird like that. Like I'm not afraid. Like even if I've tried a million things and a bunch of them didn't work out. I don't regret it. It's just part of the process. Like how am I ever going to get better if I'm not willing to try? So she's like, do that. And I'm like, oh God, this is so uncomfortable. I feel like, cause all my instinct wanted to be like, come on, let's go. Bounce.
Right. You know, well, that's interesting to bring up because that is the default people go to because they start to panic, right?
Yeah.
And
yes.
then they're like, oh my God, I need to do something like to get my dog up. And then inadvertently, what are we doing? A lot of times we're making it worse. We're putting pressure on the dog where they just need us to be like, buddy,
you're fine. Yeah, so I did my calm cue. I stood up really tall so I wouldn't put any pressure on him. I just looked at him and I'm like, you're fine. It's all good. You're okay. And he'd go, oh, I am? Yeah. Okay, cool. And it freaking worked. He'd come up and he'd be happy. And I was like, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. I did not think that was going to work, right? Yeah. So totally counterintuitive. Totally. But it's because I was using this antiquated way of thinking that was like, this is what you do for everything. Well, how is that even possible? Every dog is different. Every breed is different. Within a breed, every single dog I've ever had is different. I have dogs that are such polar opposites. You wouldn't even know they were the same breed. Right.
Right.
And like every situation is different. And they're living, breathing, sentient beings that are feeling things and processing things. They're changing moment to moment. So kind of like what you said, like the first time I was at like a national with Zeal, it was so exhausting because in every ring, moment by moment, my moment, I had to change what I was doing. 1 minute he was up, then he was down, then he was worried, then he was fine, then he was a little too aroused, then he was too low. And I was totally unpredictable. I was just constantly reading him and reacting to it. Reading, reacting, reading, reacting. It was exhausting. Fast forward X number of years, very predictable. We have a system. I know this is where you're going to act like this, and this is what you need, and this is where you're going to act like this, and this is what you need. And actually, over time, not like they didn't need my help at all, but over time, my dogs start self-regulating. They get to a certain exercise and they go, oh, hold on.
Yeah.
I got to calm myself down. They get to another exercise. They're like, oh, this is an exciting exercise and I can be excited and still execute this exercise, right? They actually know that, which I find completely fascinating. But that just happens when I consistently manipulate their arousal throughout their training consistently all the time and in the ring. And then after a while, they go, oh, I know what to do here. Oh, I know what to do there. So like you said, it does change, but it can be sometimes it seems counterintuitive, but then if you think to yourself, oh, wait, that does make sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because if I'm really nervous and I'm going to be hesitant because I'm really nervous and unsure, and someone goes, no, 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 don't be nervous. It's fine. And you're like, really? Yeah, no one's going to judge you. It's going to be okay. And you go, oh, it is. Yeah, I'm going to be right here with you. We're going to do it together. Oh, okay. Now you relax. Now you can perform more fluidly. You're more relaxed. You're more animated. You're more comfortable. So of course it makes perfect sense. So if you stop thinking of it in terms of, oh, this is going to make my dog slow and sucky, or, oh, this is going to make my dog fast and flashy, and think of it in terms of how is a dog feeling, because it's really not that different than from us at all.
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah, it's not. Yeah. Another example I was just thinking of, like, and I, like you said, with Zeal, it was exhausting, constantly manic. Like, that's pretty much where I am with Ever right now. It is just like up and down, up and down, up and down. And, you know, and she would look a little worried sometimes. And I would just, you know, instead of being like, okay, spin, bounce, like, what can you do? What do you do? Sometimes that didn't work because she would just need me to do something very calming. Is UPS there?
Yeah, somebody's there. It's so predictable.
So I would just lean down and just whisper to her. And boy, that is all that dog needed. You could feel her whole body. She would wiggle and try to lick me. And she was almost like, thank you. Thank you for doing that. And then we were ready to go. Just that subtle little thing.
Yeah, they really, I think if we just, you know, we have to really step outside the box and actually think about what we're asking them to do. Because even if you're asking a dog to do something they were bred to do, like field trials, right? What they actually have to do in the competition is so completely and utterly artificial and actually fight purposefully makes them, makes you have to fight against their instinct, right? Yeah. Like, they'll take a live bird flapping its wings very close by, shoot it, which is the most exciting thing in the world for this dog. And the dog isn't even allowed to go pick it up. It has to go do four other things that with all these things in the to mess them up. Right. So every sport, everything we're asking them to do is artificial and it is hard. It's really hard. So if you would just appreciate that, right, then you would start to go, oh, how can I help you, buddy, so that this is a little bit more comfortable for you, that this is a little bit easier for you. And ultimately, too, it will make the dog more successful, right? Yeah. But when I have students or even like friends and I'm like, and they're like, oh, my dog was this, that, and that. And I'm like, I watched it or it's on video. I go, well, look, you totally like left the dog hanging or you did this or that. I'm like, this is what you need to do. And if they go in and do what I tell them 100% of the time, 100% of the time, they come out of the ring, they look at me and they're like, oh my God, that was exhausting. And I go, good. Now imagine how your dog feels. And how was your dog in that run? 100% of the time, way better. Well, then don't complain. Do it. Right? Just like, yeah, it's exhausting. Yeah, it's hard because what we're asking them to do is hard. Do your part. You're the team. It's a team. People always forget the team portion, right? It's like, I tell you what to do, you do it. That's not a team. That's not how a team works. That's not how my teams work, right? Yeah. We're in this together. We're supposed to support each other. And I'm the leader. I'm the one that came up with this cockamamie idea that this is what we're going to do, right? Because I want things. I want them. My dog's not, doesn't give a shit about ribbons, titles, points. It could care less. Placement scores, right? So it is my responsibility and my obligation to help my dog as much as possible and to make it as comfortable for my dog as possible. And then as an added bonus, it actually makes your dog more successful.
Truth.
Right?
Truth. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, dog training. This is what's so funny. I was on this podcast yesterday with Karen Deeds and Denise Fendi. And like, I don't know, we're talking about all these things. And then we're like, yeah. And then this you have to factor in. And then somebody says, yeah. And you have to factor this in. Right. And you have to factor this in too. And then finally, at some point, Denise Fendi goes, oh my God, Dog training is so hard.
It is so hard. I always and say I'm that like, to my students. I'm like, it's so hard. I'm like, oh this is God. Why it's really hard.
I'm like, truer words were never said. It is so hard. And then like every time you have the audacity to think that you actually are a decent dog trainer and you actually know what you're doing, all you need to do is go get another dog.
Yeah,
because right. that dog will tell you within 2 months you don't know shit.
Shit,
because yep. it has happened to me. I had the audacity many dogs ago to actually think I knew what I was doing, and I like was going to train this dog, and it was going to be revolutionary because I had learned so much, and I was going to apply it all to this dog. And 2 months, like I had the dog for 2 months. I sat down on the stair in my yard and went, this dog doesn't know a single thing I've taught it. And
yeah, it's
everything
very humbling.
That I had done was out the window because none of it worked for that dog.
That dog.
So yeah. every single dog, just when you think like, well, by now I've had all these different dogs with all these different problems and all these personalities. Next dog, back to square one, right? Yep. So, but the way I look at it is if you're in this sport for short-term reward, then make your dog a pet and go find another hobby because it ain't happening, right? True. You need to love challenges. You need to love puzzles. You need to have perseverance. You need to be able to look at the long term, and you really need to be absolutely, completely, and utterly fascinated with dogs and want to understand them and yeah. be willing to put your human needs, your human ego, your human communication aside in an effort to really and truly understand the dog and to be able to communicate them on a level that they understand.
Right. Yeah. You said it. Perfect. Facts.
All right.
Okay.
That wraps up another episode.
Yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks, everybody, and happy training. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.